Good morning. Today is Monday out there. Foggy, smoky, ugly Monday. Yeah, I'm in good spirits. How about you? joining us this morning is Colby Smart from the Humboldt County Office of Ed. He is the tech dude that kind of helps out in a bunch of areas and has some fun. He even brought handwritten notes. How's that for being messed up, huh?
Yeah. I'm writing as you go, Brian.
Uh-huh. Okay, but is it legible?
No, but you don't need
good,
to
then
it.
You're a radio potential. Oh, all right, Winston, let's see if we can stun and amaze Colby here this morning and have him get it right.
Probably.
So then he has bragging rights for everybody inside of the facility.
Probably more legible than your handwriting.
Oh, and yeah.
What is the reason we say a really generous person will give you the shirt off his back?
I would say that, you know, it's maybe has to do with altruism.
That's what I'm thinking. It's something with charity in the Bible.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, give it the cloak.
Yep.
Kind of thing.
Because this once represented the ultimate in generosity.
There you go.
In the days when men wore only three pieces of wearing apparel, a coat, pants, and shirt, a person could give you his coat and still be fully covered. But if he then gave you the shirt off his back, that was all he could give, within the limits of decency.
Brian, I'd call that a win.
That's certainly a BB+. You know, and I'm glad that it didn't ever develop into giving you the pants off his backside. Yeah, that was that happened in the 70s, didn't it? Oh, gee. So how is virtual life treating you?
Well, that's a...
Oh, keeper of virtualness?
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, I think the answer to that question is really dependent on who you're speaking to. Of course, you're chatting with me. And so for some, I think the virtual experience, especially working professionals who can work from a distance, it's less impactful, obviously, than those who are maybe dependent on the service industry jobs where it is required that people are there because they are... That's the whole purpose, is to do customer service face-to-face. For students, for teachers, obviously, it's been a radical shift. In fact, as we were just talking about, probably the biggest disruption to public education in the last 120 years. Really not since the Industrial Revolution have we seen such a remake of public education.
Yeah, since it kind of became everybody, or beyond fourth or fifth grade.
Precisely. I mean, distance learning has been a part of public education, you know, really in some form or another throughout the last 100 years.
Yeah, like from the beach and the park instead of going to the classroom.
Yep.
Not field trips. Just not coming back from lunch.
Well, of course, we had correspondence schools, and this was important for rural America and rural California. But it was always largely a choice, whereas we don't necessarily have that choice right now.
So as you look at it, and there's a lot of stories that are out there floating around about this is and that's. One that we heard in the neighborhood was that they're expecting first, second, third graders to sit still for an hour for a Zoom. And it's like, wait a minute, these are kids that are, you know, every 15 minutes they need to get up and do something, just to do something. I would suspect that the model is still being tweaked and developed and trying to come up with something that really flows more, because in springtime it didn't really have a chance to get to that point of understanding.
Yeah, in the spring, a lot of people are referring to the spring as crisis teaching, right? Because we were just sort of thrust into this without the ability to prepare. Yes. It is a continual process of shifting and experimenting, but that's not so different than what teachers do when they're in the classroom. I'll give you an example. I've got a first grader at home, and you're right. It's very difficult to expect a first, second, third grader, or any kid for that matter, or even us adults, to sit still for any length of time. I walked into my son's classroom, which happens to be my dining room table, and his teacher was saying macaroni back, spaghetti back. And we're basically asking kids to move their spine and those sorts of things. So,
not return the spaghetti or return the macaroni and cheese.
No, basically. Okay. So teachers are doing a fantastic job trying to make the best of this situation and also experimenting and getting kids moving when possible.
Yeah, the cultural stuff is obviously entirely different. You know, you got your little guy there, and then maybe his brother, sister is down the hall somewhere. Okay, fine. But that recess, you know, playing kickball.
Yeah.
Or whatever they allow to be done anymore. I don't know what can be played or not be played. Run in the field. How's that? That's probably pretty tame.
Yep.
Those types of things where the kids just kind of burn off the energy a little bit and come back and kind of at least have a chance to refocus for a little bit more. Mm-hmm. Do they say something like, go play with the dog? 5 minutes, guys, go play with the dog, go run outside, go do whatever you need to do, and see you back in five?
Absolutely. I've got three children, and each of them actually have PE assigned in a distance learning environment. In smart household, that could look like, my son being on a pogo stick, jumping around the backyard, or my daughter actually doing, 30 to 45.
Band-aid repair after your son is on the pogo stick in the backyard.
It's one of the advantages of being home. No rush into the school. Or my daughter, where she's in high school and there's requirements for the physical movement. So
it's all kind of, it's in there, it's just different.
It's different, and this whole thing is different. But the fundamentals of that, what makes a learning experience good, is the same in a classroom environment or a distance learning environment. The setting is really not the most important thing. The most important thing are really focusing on student-to-teacher relationships, making sure that teachers teachers are clear in their expectations, but students are, there's certain parameters that they understand of what needs to be, what they need to do to be successful.
I would think testing would be kind of an interesting thing. Unless absolutely. It's all done, I guess, by composition or something like that. Mm-hmm. We'll touch on that when we come back. It's 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music. ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and the Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio, easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music, and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music, easy radio.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Colby Smart from the Humboldt County Office of Ed. You've got a title, huh?
I do.
Okay. We won't say what it is, but he's got a title. Before the break, we were talking a little bit about some of the different challenges, and obviously one of them that's would be on the plate anyway is with the fires.
Yep.
We got them in Hoopaw Valley on the reservation and around the reservation,
right.
Willow Creek, Eastern Humboldt. Certainly Southern Humboldt is getting nailed also.
Mm-hmm.
We've got the air quality, which would probably be bringing everybody inside. And I'm sure Maple Creek and some of those folks are always on constant standby alert status. What does that do as far as the technology, the availability of it, how people are reacting, and priority in their lives? I mean, if there's a fire 2 miles away, I'm really not going to worry about my kid sitting in front of a computer.
No, of course not.
We're going to be paying attention to what's going on, and maybe those are the life lessons for today.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, just like any other time, people's safety is the most important thing. The access to technology, I'm not sure the fires, unless they, of course, melt the fiber, has an impact per se.
Or forcing people out of their homes.
Right, yeah. Of course. And if there's a fire at people's homes and then there's enough risk, then the school district would close like any other time. You know, kids are off. And so the expectations of sitting, or working in a distance, become less and less. In our county, we have some challenges when it comes to access to technology, and I mean access to the internet and also access to devices. And that's driven by two primary things that I've observed over the last, you know, half a year or so, but even longer. One is our geographic isolation to the rest of California. We haven't got the infrastructure necessarily to ensure equitable access to the internet, right? And then the internet now is a driver. It's much like a utility. It's a driver of business. It's a driver of commerce. It's a driver of education. And we've got, you know, pockets in our county where it's they may have devices, but they haven't got access to the internet. And so that's an opportunity for us.
Density is a challenge. Yeah,
it is. It's an opportunity for us as a community going forward to really look at how can we maybe invest in our infrastructure.
You mean fill in the blanks?
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, educational term.
Yes.
Oh, okay,
yeah,
done.
Speaking of assessments,
that was like about a five count, huh?
We were talking about assessments before the break. And you're right. In a distance environment, just giving a kid a math test is not necessarily the best way to assess learning. What you want to do is go from formative or summative assessment, which is the big test at the end of the unit, to more formative assessment. And teachers do that in a number of ways. But basically, you're checking for understanding as you go along.
Conceptual grasping rather than answering the questions at the end of the chapter.
Precisely. And it's not necessarily a test along the way. It's project-based learning. It's conversation, those sorts of things.
Now, you mentioned tests, Colby, and we've got the graduation requirements that are tested for. Mm-hmm. We've got advancement, you know, from class to class or school to school that's tested. And then the state also has theirs. In the midst of all of this stuff, has that been relaxed? Has it been set aside? Because I don't think anybody is unfamiliar with the concern and the discussion that's been going for a long period of time, that this isn't nearly as efficient a learning model, and that kids, particularly those you were talking about that are outside of ease access areas, are going to fall behind, and we're losing a year of education, basically. And how to catch up is different discussion, but we're slowly falling behind, and the longer this goes, the further behind the kids are.
Yeah, you know, in particular to the state assessments, what are known as CASP, last spring when all of this started going down, those were canceled, right? Because obviously there was no way you could reliably assess students on those kind of statewide assessments. Where a lot of schools and teachers are focusing on, especially at the startup of the school year, is measuring what's called learning loss, right? And typically there is a little bit of learning loss in the summer, right? But that was extended from March until the fall. So a lot of teachers are and schools are looking for ways to assess that learning loss, because if teachers understand where students are at, they're going to be better able to adjust their curriculum to meet.
Could you just kind of restart last year? So if you got a fourth grader and they bump to fifth grade, go back to fourth grade and maybe, you know, speed read or, you know, power through it a little bit instead of taking 2 weeks. Maybe we take 5 days and then do whatever the determinants are and then move on. So it's kind of a refresher, but it's also a catch-up, and now you've got the momentum going into what should be being taught or that the kids should be learning this year.
That's precisely what a lot of teachers are doing. They're assessing where students are at, doing the refresher where necessary, and then moving on.
Without guilt or shame. Because,
of course not.
Because that's what they always used on us after summer break in the past, but this time it's a different dynamic.
Yeah, and you know, while I don't think it's the norm, we have to also realize that in some cases students flourish in this environment because there's more one-on-one attention. There's especially in the spring, more parents were home, so they could provide that one-on-one support. So in some cases, and again, I don't think it's the majority. Some students are forcing.
It's 8:30.
Hi, Hi, my name is Keith Lund. I am an electrician for Owsley Electric. You can go into a trade, be 18, become a trainee. They do require some education. You have 120 hours of classroom education, plus you have to work 2,000 hours a year. So after 4 years, then you can go out and work for another company, getting your own certificate, become your own boss. There's quite a few options you can do.
Own your future and learn more about the Trades Academy at hcoe.org.
Good morning, KINS. News and information time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Colby Smart. Okay, here we go. Assistant Superintendent of Technology?
No, Educational Services.
Oh, crud.
Which you know, does include these days, especially a lot of educational technology.
Okay, for the Humboldt County Office of Ed.
Yes.
Got that part right.
You did.
Yes.
Thanks, Brian.
So did Chris just sleep in this morning?
No. I don't.
This was a planned event.
It was a planned event.
Okay.
So.
Okay. Well, good for you. Some of the different challenges that are out there, though, Colby, have got to be the anticipated ones, the regular ones. Mm-hmm. You know, has this changed the focus or unfocused those expected areas of challenge to deal with this unexpected, or is there just more on the plate and you just got more to do? And you know that, you know, if you take a sick day, it's going to be even higher than it would have been otherwise on your desk when you come back the next day.
Well, certainly the perennial challenges that we as educators are dealing with is in helping to ensure kids are reading at grade level, are excelling at math and science and those sorts of things. And because we have been thrust in a very disruptive environment. It's not that that can't be done. It just means that teachers, educators, our entire system's not geared towards supporting early literacy and math, science, and social-emotional things in a distance environment. So we're in a period of transition, and I will, you know, we'll be in that period of transition until we start to transition back, whenever that may be. Whenever that may be, there are again.
What are you guys anticipating this entire academic year being as it is today? Are you thinking,
boy,
the first of the year?
I forgot my crystal ball in the car, Brian.
But your plans?
Yeah. Oh yes, yes. In fact, there are plans upon plans. Then as you know, we've got 31 school districts in Humboldt County, and that means that we've got 31 independent. Bodies that make decisions based on the needs and the realities of their communities. And this is a case where I feel truly blessed inside our county, because we do have all these communities where a one-size-fits-all is absolutely not the right thing. It wouldn't work.
You mean just like the state to the counties?
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah. And so I think in Humboldt County, we are fortunate that we've got the number of school districts that we do have, because it allows communities to be more responsive to the needs of their own
their neighborhoods.
Particular
state. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
There are other things that, like, for example, how do you do a substitute in a distance learning environment, right? Those were already challenges before the pandemic. They continue to be during the pandemic as well. In some cases, it's easier because if a teacher is maybe teaching from home, in some cases it's more difficult, right? Because, for example, a substitute typically may not know how to run a Zoom classroom. So how do you prepare for those?
Yeah, you got the technical elements of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so it's important to approach any of this, and not just in education, but just in our broader community, with a sense of experimentation and also grace, knowing people are going to make mistakes, but I've not met one person that's not trying their hardest to do the best on behalf of the kids.
Yeah, I would suspect that the challenge is there and is being embraced. Otherwise,
yes,
they wouldn't be there embracing it.
Yeah,
so.
You know, and the difference between the learning experience in the spring and now is, and I would hope that parents, you know, me as a parent, I've noticed a dramatic difference, and that's a result of the dedication of the administrators and the teachers and the broader community just really rallying around this unique problem that we are facing.
Yeah, it's certainly an opportunity for creativity.
Oh, for sure.
Across the board. Mm-hmm. Now, with the reading skill sets that the little guys have got or that they're trying to master. Mm-hmm. Now, I know that things have changed because I remember flashcards. So I know that, that is no longer. But
sure.
Is it different types of computer programs now with the off-site learning so that they are matching symbols with sounds? Because they probably have a pretty good vocabulary, verbal. Mm-hmm. But the vocabulary written or the vocabulary visual probably isn't there so much.
Yeah.
So are they reading like, Dr. Seuss on the laptop? Or are you providing Dr. Seuss books to everybody out there and they can look at it and then talk with their teacher over the computer screen?
That's an absolutely wonderful question, Brian. Thank you. So at the center of all of this is the student-teacher relationship, right? So at the very core, in essence, of all of this is teachers getting together with students. And then now, as opposed to, say, 10 years ago, there are lots of software programs not designed to replace the teacher, but to supplement the instruction. So, for example, there are software programs out there that will have students read a book. Could be Dr. Seuss, could be,
War and Peace.
Could be War and Peace.
A little bit of a spectrum there,
There is. And then those software programs can actually have built-in assessments. And actually, one of the ways that they're more responsive, so if a student is reading at a higher grade level, they're going to be able to read those things. And then also, if students need additional support, those programs that are designed to do that. But you cannot absolutely replace the student-to-teacher relationship. Because
it sounds a whole lot more college-esque in the model, which I think, I don't know, the ones that I hung out with or for me personally, love college, hated high school. Because one was kind of geared of areas of interest for me. You know, if I could have taken history all day long and Shakespeare in high school, I would have had a blast.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the other ones, not so much so. Okay, fine. I mean, that's easy enough. But it sounds like this is more individualized so that the kid, if they're reading well, they can take off instead of having to teach or stay with the norm of the class.
Yeah, and the educational jargon is it's called differentiation.
So, I'll try to figure out how to spell that one during
the
break.
So I won't use that word again. Yeah. But basically what it does is it helps personalize the learning experience for the student. The requirements are the same. The standards are the same. But it allows maybe for a little bit more flexibility for the individual student.
Back to college. KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:43.
The Redwood Region Economic Development Commission wants you to know that local economic development agencies, business resource organizations, financial institutions, and jurisdictions are working together to provide resources for the COVID-19 pandemic. For more information, go to northcoastsbdc.org or call the OES Business Hotline at 268-2527. 268-2527.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:47. We're back talking shop this morning with Colby Smart from Humboldt County Office of Ed. What are the takeaways now, Colby, with, let's say, if folks are anticipating, what are we here, middle of September?
Yeah.
So through the end of the year, through Christmas break, mm-hmm. Is it more of the same? Do you think that there's any changes? Should parents be kind of paying attention, looking for certain things, grandma, grandpa? Mm-hmm. Can they help out? What kind of advice would you be giving folks now for the next, as the weather changes?
Yeah, I would certainly advise and recommend that parents pay attention to what's going on in the school, because every month there are board meetings. And so schools have been doing an amazing job paying very close attention to health statistics, to preparation, to whether or not it's possible to actually go back face-to-face, to return to a classroom-based learning setting. And so you know, depending on the health situation, that's going to drive the decision whether or not schools can go back to a classroom-based
environment. Is that a district-by-district decision? Is that your guys' decision, the state's determination?
Well, it's kind of a mix. It's not HCOE's. It's not the Humboldt County Office of Education's decision. We don't have oversight in that area. To a degree, it's a state decision. The state has now has four levels of, and the highest is...
Purple.
Yeah, purple. Exactly, purple. In those places, in those
states, nice purple shirt, by the way.
Thank you. In those counties where they were purple at the start of the school year, they were required to start from a distance. They had to do distance-based learning. Humboldt County, we were now orange. It used to be called the watch list or the not watch list, you might remember. We're still orange, so we have that flexibility, and that's why you see all these different models. About 10% of our schools in Humboldt County are face-to-face with a modified schedule, right?
I liked face-to-flight. That was good.
Classroom-based with a modified schedule. About 20% are doing hybrid. So there's some...
Mornings, half the school in the mornings, exactly. Half in the afternoon kind of thing?
Exactly. And then about 70% are still fully distanced. With the exception, some school districts, because there's not a lot of kids... on campus, they're able to serve certain populations who may need additional support. For example, students with disabilities. There are a lot of school districts really trying to serve those children.
Yeah, that's got to be. Has there been changes in the standards for those students also? I mean, I would
not the federal requirements. There are a lot of federal requirements and state requirements that drive decisions about educating kids, students with disabilities, and what.
So those haven't been relaxed or adjusted?
No, not necessarily.
Okay.
Not the federal ones. So there's still requirements that all students in California and the United States receive a free and appropriate education, a fair and appropriate education. It's called FAPE. And so how that's done is different.
The challenges continue, huh?
Yeah. How that's done is different, but school districts, teachers are... working hard to...
Making it through. Exactly. Kind of like this show. You made it through. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks,
Brian. Nice to see you again.
You can have my note page.
Oh, joy. We'll frame it. See everybody tomorrow.